This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. I'm sorry. Excuse me just a moment, please. Hello?
Hello, this is Rachel at Cardholder Services, calling in reference to your current credit card account. There are no problems currently with your account. It is urgent that you contact us concerning your eligibility for lowering your interest rate.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to stop her right there. That's my friend Rachel. She calls me all the time. Actually, she's not my friend, but she does call me all the time. Rachel is just one of the many robocalls most of us get every day, several times a day. In March, 3 billion robocalls were made in the U.S. alone. In April, that number reached 3.4 billion. That's 900 million more calls than just a year ago. And the numbers continue to rise despite the Do Not Call registry. So what's going on here? What, if anything, can be done to stop these calls? What is being done? We're going to look into that this hour. Maggie Reardon reports on this regularly, among many other things, for CNET, where she is a senior reporter, and she joins us this morning via Skype. Welcome to the program, Maggie.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Maureen Mahoney's also on Skype. She's a public policy fellow at Consumers Union. Thank you for being here.
Hi, great to be here.
Nice to have you. And Margot Sanders is senior counsel at the National Consumer Law Center. We ran out of Skype channels, so she's on the phone this morning. Margot, thank you for joining us.
Sure, thank you.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at charlottetalks, and we'd love to hear from you. I'm sure you'll have some things to say about this morning. Maggie, first, let's define what a robocall is. I can't imagine people don't know what we're talking about, but maybe. I thought I knew what I was talking about until I started reading about this yesterday. And there were some examples being used that I would not have associated with something that's a robocall, like your pharmacy calling you without permission to let you know that your prescriptions were about to expire. So define robocalls.
Well, robocall is anything that uses an auto dialer, and it's a pre-recorded message. So, that would be your pharmacy. It could be a political campaign. It could be somebody who's trying to collect money, a debt collector, any of those things. They all can use robocalls. And then, of course, the annoying marketing ones as well.
Just so our listeners know, CNBC ranks Atlanta's 404 area code as the one getting the highest number of robocalls. But our area code, it's 704, one of our area codes, 704 here in Charlotte, is seventh, just behind New York City. We get a lot of robocalls. Anybody want to wager as to why?
You know, I wouldn't be able to say why that specific area gets more robocalls, but just the fact that, in general, we're seeing a lot more because the technology is so easy and so cheap. It basically costs somebody nothing to set up a bunch of robocalls and just start spamming people.
Yeah.
So that's, that's why it's on the rise.
Go ahead.
This is Margot Saunders. We think it's the reason that it's on the rise is because the callers themselves are expecting very positive rulings from the Federal Communications Commission, making the consequences for illegally calling people without consent less onerous or even non-existent. So as a result of the change in leadership of the FCC and a recent court action, we believe that at least some of these new robocalls or the increase in the robocalls is because of the expectation that more will be allowed to be made without consent, and thus more will be made without our ability to stop them.
But do you have any understanding as to why certain areas of the country seem to get more? Why would Atlanta, for instance, get more than New York City? There are more people in New York.
I have no idea.
Okay.
We have come up with some ideas, but really the types of robocalls that people are getting is largely, according to UNET, largely dictated by what they've agreed to. All robocalls are not illegal per se. A robocall is only illegal if the consumer receiving the call has not consented to it. Hmm. So it might be that people in Charlotte have agreed that more of their drugstores should be calling them and notifying them when their prescription's ready. It might be that there are more scam artists targeting people in Charlotte. It might be that there's more people who owe debts. The 20 greatest of the 20 largest number of the 20 callers who make the most robocalls each month, 17 or 18 of them are debt collectors. So who knows which of those reasons might be applicable to each individual city.
So Maury Mahoney, despite the billions of calls that are made each month, the Federal Trade Commission, which oversees the Do Not Call Registry, says it received, and these numbers keep changing, and everything I read, I get different numbers, but the last figure that I saw was it received a mere 4.5 million complaints in all of 2017, about 5.3 million in the prior year. That seems, when you talk about billions of calls a month, 4.5 million complaints in the whole year seems tiny. Why is it so small?
Why is it so much smaller in the first half of the year as opposed to...
No, just why are there so few complaints when you consider how many calls there are?
Oh, I see. Well, I think consumers are frustrated because they complain to the FTC and the FCC, and they're still receiving all of these phone calls. There's a feeling that enforcement isn't effective and it's not going to prevent them from getting more calls. So I think that explains why you're seeing a small amount of complaints in comparison to the whole problem.
Would you agree with Margo that enforcement is not particularly effective and that perhaps there is a laissez-faire attitude at the FCC about all this?
I mean, I do think it's important for there to be enforcement in order to hold scammers to justice. You can't have a free-for-all in which, you know, everyone's allowed to robocall. I think it's important to maintain strong legal protections against these robocalls so that there are strong incentives not to call. However, you know, you certainly have circumstances where callers are contacting consumers in violation of the law. So I do think it's important for consumers to have kind of a last line of defense against these calls in the form of advanced call blocking technology.
I know that my numbers have been on the Do Not Call list for years, and I've gone back in to re-register them over time because I thought, well, it's not working, so maybe it fell out of the system. So I put it back in, and it's still not working. Margo, does the Do Not Call list simply have no teeth? And if not, why not?
Yes, the Do Not Call list has no teeth. And the reason it doesn't is because there's just so many calls that are in violation of it. There have been several recent enforcement efforts brought by both the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, which is in charge of regulating and enforcing the Do Not Call list, as well as several state and private enforcement efforts. But there's just too many calls out there to rely on a relatively small government agency to enforce it. So that's why we want to rely on the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, which allows for private enforcement much more immediately. You can get enforcement for the Do Not Call list privately, but it's a much more complex task. And that and the Telephone Consumer Protection Act provides private enforcement for any consumer who receives a single call or any number of calls that violate that were made to the cell phone without consent.
And I think part of the issue too is that, you know, it's really hard to figure out who is making these calls, right? I mean, so you can have lots of enforcement and things on the books, but if you can't actually figure out who the caller is because the numbers are always changing and because the technology makes it difficult to trace and a lot of these banks are outside the country, then it's just difficult to enforce it. And I think really, you know, from my perspective as a technology reporter, I think a lot of this does come down to the technology and that it's just so darn easy and so darn cheap to be able to do it that anybody who wants to can do it. And the folks who are not following the Do Not Call list and don't care about these statutes and whatnot, it's because they're doing this illegally and they know it's illegal.
Does it work? I mean, these people who are making these calls and they're making billions of these calls because the computer's doing it with a recording that comes on, are they effective? Do they work for these people? Do people respond? The people who answer the phone follow through on what they're telling them they should do, whatever it happens to be?
So I think the answer is yes. clearly they do, otherwise they wouldn't make the calls. The calls are inexpensive, but they're not zero cost. So the investment plus the potential litigation costs must be worth it to the people who are making the calls. But we know who, but let's, I think this conversation is conflating a little bit robocalls with scam calls, and that's not quite accurate.
Okay.
We know who the callers are from the information provided by the UMail robocall index. And about 20% are the reminders, like from your doctor or your pharmacist, that your medication is due. About 30% are from debt collectors, and we most definitely know who they are because they're leaving their numbers so that the person called can respond and pay their debts. Another 30% are telemarketers, and these are gross numbers. They're averages, but these are approximate. The next 30% are telemarketers selling real products. And it's only the remaining 20% that are telemarketing scammers like Rachel from credit card services. So we tend to conflate the scammers with all of illegal robocalls. And the top three, we actually can find out who they are because they're trying to achieve, they want us to know who they are.
The people who are debt collectors, I mean, those are legal calls. They're allowed.
No, not necessarily. Not the most of the lawsuits under the Telephone Consumer Protection Act are brought against debt collectors, and that means they're not legal calls. The law defines an auto dialed call, a covered call, as a call with a human that is made over an automated equipment, or a call with a pre-recorded voice or an artificial voice. Any one of those three calls are covered calls and require consent if they're made to a cell phone, or no consent if they're just pre-recorded or artificial and telemarketing only and made to a landline. But so most of the lawsuits and most of the complaints are about the calls made to cell phones, which are all automated calls and must have consent unless it's an emergency.
No one has spoken of charities in all of this, and a lot of charities must use these automatic dialers, don't they?
They do, but they cannot call cell phones without consent.
Okay.
If they have consent, and you can give consent by, I know when I give to a charity, if you sign up online, they often ask you for the phone number. And once you give your phone number, that's deemed to be consent.
Wow. So somebody mentioned Rachel a second ago, and we started the program with Rachel's phone call from credit card services. What does Rachel want? I've never responded. So what does she want?
Well, the calls differ, and some of them are actually using different names, and the offer may be different. But we've heard that sometimes Rachel promises to lower your credit card interest rates in return for a flat fee. And of course, that's a phony offer. The reduction isn't offered.
That's Maureen Mahoney, public policy fellow at Consumers Union. Also with us, Maggie Reardon, senior reporter for CNET, and Margo Saunders, a senior counsel with the National Consumer Law Center. We're going to talk more about these robocalls and what you can do to stop them when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about robocalls, their frequency, how the government feels about it, how you feel about it, what you can do to stop them, etc. With Maggie Reardon, senior reporter with CNET, Maureen Mahoney, public policy fellow at Consumers Union, and Margo Saunders, senior counsel with the National Consumer Law Center. The Congress, both the House and Senate, have recently held hearings, I think within the last 2 weeks, and both chambers have either passed or introduced legislation aimed at curbing abuses. Margo, I know you testified. Do you know what they consider abusive?
I think that the definition differs based on what party you're in, unfortunately. Many of the Republicans seem to side with the industry with the calling industry on this point. And the calling industry is seeking to narrow the definition of auto dialer to make many of the calls that are unwanted and complained about illegal, legal and not covered by the TCPA. The Democrats seemed generally united in expanding the definition and ensuring that consumers have more control over those calls, which would be gained by requiring consent for more calls. The critical point is that if the calls require consent, then the consumer can say, stop calling me, and that will stop the calls. If the calls aren't covered at all under the law, there's no way the consumer can control them.
I have actually said stop calling me, and it hasn't stopped. So there are, and we're going to talk about this, because there are a few penalties, and because some of these callers are God knows where in the world, they don't feel any compunction to obey your request or your command. Maggie, what do you hear from your readers? How should people feel about these calls? Should they just look at this as just a small nuisance of modern life that occasionally has a benefit? Or by gosh, stop it?
I think most consumers say stop it. They can't stand it. But I think what people forget is the robocalls that they like, right? Like, I like that I get a call from my kid's school telling me that it's canceled, so I don't have to remember to call them, or from your pharmacy reminding you to re-up your prescription. So, I mean, I think in the minds of consumers, people don't really associate those with robocalls. I think when they think of robocalls, they think of the really annoying ones, like Rachel from Card Services, or the horn that blows saying that I just want a free cruise.
Yes.
You know, I think those are what, people are mad about those.
To me, it's the calls that you receive from entities with which you have no relationship.
So exactly. That's what really annoys that? Me.
Sure, go ahead, challenge it.
Can I challenge it a little bit? So if you have three kids in the school system and you get a call from the school system every time there's band practice, and every one of those calls comes into both parents' cell phone and the landline, you really get tired very quickly of the multiple calls. And I agree, we all want the calls from the school when there's been an emergency or it's a snow day. But there was recently a proceeding in front of the FCC where there was an extensive discussion about which of those calls from the schools are considered covered calls, or in other words, they're all considered robocalls. But which are the calls that the consumer, that the parent has consented to? And the answer really lies in what kind of consent the parent or the receiver of the call has given. So there have been lawsuits about this because sometimes schools don't stop calling. I know one parent got calls about snow days and band practices and fundraisers years after all her kids had graduated, was tearing her hair out because she wanted them to stop.
So what I'm hearing you say, Margo Saunders, you're with the National Consumer Law Center, is that you and your organization are pretty much, you want relief from all of these calls. I think you told the U.S. Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation, you called for consumer relief. And when you say consumer relief, you want it from all of these calls, not just these calls that come in from Rachel and cruise lines wanting to give you a free cruise.
So I am not saying we don't want the calls. I'm saying consumers should have control over the calls, and that the calls should be covered under the law, as the law seems to have intended them to be, mm-hmm. and consumers should be allowed to receive them as long as the consumer consents, and allowed to stop receiving them as long as the consumer revokes consent.
And how would you make that happen? How would you make that happen technically?
Well, it's supposed to happen under the law, and the reason that I think it's not happening now, you said a minute ago that you're revoking consent all the time and they don't stop. I think for the legitimate callers, for the illegitimate callers, the ones that are not going to obey the law, the industry is correct that the only thing that will stop them is caller authentication, call spoofing, and what Maureen of Consumers Union has been pushing is realistic call blocking.
Hmm.
But so you need call authentication so that we actually know who it is that's calling to block the right calls. But for those callers who you know who they are and you want them to stop, you should be allowed to ask for the calls, which is to consent, and then you should be allowed to stop the calls, which is revocation. I have a case in my testimony. The first one was a woman who had received 2,000 calls from Conn's Appliances when she was paying her debt, but they wouldn't stop, and their position was that she didn't have the right to stop the call.
Wow.
And that's the distinction.
So, Maureen, you also testified, I believe it was last month, on behalf of Consumers Union before Congress. What did you tell them? What did you have to say to them about this?
Right. So first, I'd say that we completely agree with Margot. Consumers should have the right or the opportunity to consent to all non-emergency auto dial calls, and these protections should be consistent across the board. So Margot did a great job of testifying on those issues before the Senate, just before me. And then I focused a little bit more on calling on the FCC to require the phone companies to implement technology that would identify and stop spoofed calls, as well as, you know, giving further protections to give consumers the option to block all unwanted robocalls. So that was the main focus.
Since debt collection and debt collectors seem to be the principal originators of these calls, if you actually owe a debt and you are behind on paying back that debt, would they, under the law, have the right to call you even if you said stop? Or is this just because of aggressive and sometimes abusive tactics to get you to pay what you owe that you're against this?
So, this is Margot. The answer is unfortunately not simple. If they're calling you on a landline and the caller is not governed by the federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act because the caller is collecting its own debt and it's not a third-party collector, then the only way to stop those calls would be if there's a state law that requires, that applies and prohibits abusive activity. If they're calling you to your cell phone and they're using an automated dialer, then the TCPA that I've been talking about would apply, and you should be able to stop them regardless of what kind of collector they are.
Why do we still have a distinction between landlines and cell phones? Because today, very few people are still charged by the call on a cell phone.
It's a relic of the law itself, which was passed, I think, in 1991 when cell phones did almost always charge every person per call. But don't forget that we estimate between 25% and 30% of consumers are still using the types of phones that do charge per call or per minute. Those are mostly low-income consumers.
Okay.
So the cost is still relevant to a substantial number of people.
So debt collection, somebody wanted to jump in before I start. Who wanted to jump in? Nobody? Okay.
I would just say that it's important to have strong protections for landlines as well, because we receive so many complaints from consumers about auto-dialed and pre-recorded calls to their landlines.
Okay. Debt collection call. This is where it gets very foggy, at least for me here, in terms of the legality of all this when it comes to debt collection calls, because they are legal. And banks and debt collectors have asked the FCC to change the rules to allow them to avoid penalties if illegal robocalls or robotexts are sent accidentally. They claim that they're currently the subject of too many frivolous lawsuits. Would you say, I'm not sure who to ask this question of, but would you say this, that's true, that they are the subject of too many frivolous lawsuits?
I'd say they're the subject of a number of lawsuits, but the courts are well equipped to decide which cases are frivolous and to throw them out when they aren't frivolous. You don't need a change in the underlying consumer protection law to protect the callers. The banks are quite capable and often do get their the cases against them dismissed when the cases are not based on real violations of the law. On the other hand, there's a lot of cases which are settled for substantial sums of money because the banks refuse to comply and do not stop calling consumers after they've repeatedly requested that the calls stop.
It's so frustrating for consumers. We hear from them all the time that they're receiving these robo calls for debt collection, for debts that they don't even owe, and the caller doesn't believe them that they don't owe the debt. So it's really difficult sometimes to get them to stop.
So Maggie, there are legitimate robocalls that need to get through. We've talked about that, schools calling because of a snow day or whatever it may be. Technically, how difficult is it for phone companies to let those calls pass through but block illegal or illegitimate robocalls once you've said, I don't want these calls anymore from this particular number or whatever? Are there regulations or laws that make it difficult to do? Does technology make it difficult to do?
Well, I think that there are some really good call blocking technologies out there, and people can download apps and carriers can implement some things. I think that there is some issues with the law in terms of, you know, carriers are required to complete calls. So you've got to change the regulation there to allow them to do that. And I think the FCC was working toward that if they haven't already adopted that measure. So, you know, I think the technology is there to help. You know, will it eliminate it completely? You know, I'm not quite sure about that, because the robocallers and the bad actors are also advancing, right? I mean, the call spoofing is a difficult one to figure out, because that basically pretends to be a different number, yeah. And it's very easy to do. But, you know, I think, Maureen, you guys were also looking into this and trying to push for more of those technologies to be used, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we've long called for the phone companies to offer to consumers free advanced call blocking tools. We were really inspired by the Federal Trade Commission that held a contest to identify advanced technology that would be able to tell a scam or spam robocall and stop it before it reached consumers.
Do those technologies only work on cell phones, or do they work on landlines as well? Because you can't download an app on a landline.
Right. So the best options are for smartphones. There are a number of third-party call blocking tools that are out there, and some phone companies are beginning to offer their own apps for smartphone users. For landlines, the best options are for advanced landlines called VoIP. And that's when your phone line is bundled into your, you know, your cable and internet.
That's voice over IP, over the internet, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So although many consumers have this technology, but or this advanced phone line, but they're not aware of it. For those consumers, there's a tool called Nomo Robo, which was actually the winner of that FTC contest that I referenced earlier. And Volunteers for Consumer Reports found that effective against unwanted calls.
So these consumers who have this voice over IP technology and don't know it, is that because they're getting their phones from their cable TV company, and that's essentially the technology that they are using, but consumers think of it as the phone?
Right. So when you hear voice over IP or internet-based technology, I think people are thinking of Skype, like they're talking to their computer. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you have this this landline that's more advanced based on internet technology, but you're still using a regular phone, you can use something like Nomo Robo usually.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize they have VoIP, even if they have Verizon, for example. So if you have a Fios service, you know, in some areas, Verizon isn't even offering the old style copper telephone line into your house.
Right.
Everything is internet based. And so that's what I think she means, that people don't even realize that,
right.
You know, their phone, they pick it up, they still get a dial tone, but it could be voice over IP.
So, Maureen, you're with Consumers Union, and I'm just curious about how companies that continue to make these unwanted phone calls are, do they, given the number of complaints, and the complaints are rising, and the number of calls that we get, which are far more than the complaints, but it's just so darned annoying to everybody, do these companies run the risk of alienating their own potential customers or even their already owned customer base by making these calls.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense to me why, you know, some businesses are continuing to call consumers against their consent. We hear that consumers aren't even picking up the phone anymore because they don't know what's going to be a scam and what's a legitimate call. And it's undermining the quality of the phone service that the phone companies provide. So I think it's in their best interest as well to do a better job.
I mean, Maggie, several years ago, I just simply stopped answering my landline. If I didn't recognize the number on caller ID, I just don't answer it. If it's that important, it'll go to voicemail. I'll check it eventually. I'll call them back. So has it become worth whatever it costs to generate these calls when a lot of people simply don't answer the phone anymore?
Well, I mean, I think someone else mentioned this. I don't think that marketers would be doing this if it didn't have some sort of payoff. So I think it does work for them. You know, I think that one of the things that's kind of scary and annoying is when you get the spoofed call that looks like it's coming from like your number. And that's happened to me, and you're kind of confused because you're like, how am I calling myself? Or this doesn't make any sense.
Well,
I recognize this number.
Let's talk about that. Well, let's talk about spoofing for a second, because I have an email about this from Garth in Kings Mountain. We get calls that show numbers calling as somebody we know. We've even had calls that show our own number, he says. We have blocked calls. There is no defense for this nuisance. I had a lady call me on my cell phone a couple of weeks ago and say that, you know, you stopped calling me. And I said, I never called you, ever. No, you just called me 3 times this morning. What do you want and who are you? Evidently, my number was being spoofed. I called Verizon. They said there's nothing they can do to stop it. When we come back, I want to find out if that's true. We'll come back in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about robocalls, their proliferation, what's legal, what's not, what you can do about it to stop them, if in fact you can. Margot Saunders joins us. She's senior counsel with the National Consumer Law Center. Maureen Mahoney is public policy fellow at Consumers Union. And Maggie Reardon, senior reporter at CNET, is also with us. And we were talking just before the break about spoofing, where a number will pop up on your phone as the phone rings, and it's not the number the call is actually coming from. And people have complained that they're getting calls from friends, but it's not their friend, or even their own number will pop up on the screen. And as I just said, somebody accused me of doing it because my number kept popping up and they called me and I had never called them. And Verizon said there's nothing they can do about it. They said that they were working on the spoofing problem. Are they working on it, Maggie, or are they waiting for the FCC to make some decisions like the one they made last week where they voted to evaluate a system that would let phone companies check if a number that's calling you is legitimate?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, as bad of a rap as phone companies get, I mean, they don't want their customers to be annoyed either. So, you know, I take them at face value that they're working on something. You know, is it there yet? No, because it's still happening. But, you know, from a legal perspective, I don't know what can be done to those folks. I don't know if Margot,
this must be illegal. Is it illegal?
Well, it is illegal under the law currently, but there's very little enforcement. The phone companies at the moment maintain, and I have no reason to doubt this, that they don't have the technology to authenticate phone calls. So the FCC has initiated a series of proceedings to encourage phone companies to develop that technology and allow them to authenticate phone calls. We have, Maureen and I and other consumer groups, have been pushing the FCC to require this authentication on a much quicker basis. We refuse to believe that if we can send a spacecraft to Jupiter and take pictures and send them back, that we cannot develop technologies to authenticate.
Well, talk to me about what is entailed in authenticating a phone call, because when I called Verizon, they said it's the reason we can't do this is because these calls are spoofing your other numbers are not coming from a telephone. They're coming from a computer. So I guess they're coming over voice over IP technology. They don't see that as a phone call. Is that accurate?
Well, whether it begins as a phone call, it certainly ends as a phone call.
Okay.
So the question is whether when the telephone companies can develop technologies that will ascertain that the caller ID provided with the call actually matches the origination of the call.
Mm-hmm.
And you're about to exceed my knowledge on the subject.
Okay.
I'm just taking the position that I find it hard to believe that it's impossible to develop such a technology.
I'm going to come to Maggie for that in a second. But Maureen, do phone companies want this ability?
They say that they do. They receive so many complaints from consumers about these calls, and the spoofing does make it difficult to track down and identify who's actually making these calls and to stop them. So they say that they're in favor of caller ID authentication technology in order to offer kind of a long-term solution to the spoofing problem and to improve call blocking capabilities. However, this has been in development for years now. So we'd like to see it move a little bit faster. And another factor is that everybody would have to participate in the system, all of the phone companies.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important to require compliance.
So Maggie, from a technological standpoint, every transaction from a computer seems to have metadata attached to it. And if you're going to go on the internet, it has to have an address and it has to know where the connection's coming from so the two computers can talk. I would assume that something similar is happening when a computer makes a connection to a telephone and they want to actually be able to speak to you. Is it impossible to figure out where this is coming from?
You know, I'm sure it's not impossible, but I think the other thing that we're forgetting is that a lot of this is probably originating from outside the U.S. So, that makes it difficult to try to stop that. I agree that, there's a lot of things that can be traced online, and I'm sure that they... You know, there is some way to do this. Is it complicated? Yeah, it is. But, maybe it hasn't been until, the last couple of years with people being outraged about this. You know, I think if consumers are annoyed enough and speak enough to their providers that they will try to do something. And as long as there is a regulatory and legal framework for them to do it, they'll do it. Now, it is sometimes difficult to get the major carriers to invest and do things together. So that's where I think the public policy really has to come into play. And you have to have agencies like the FCC that regulate them to push them to comply.
So
another thing I'd like to add is that, part of the problem is that these calls are being routed through multiple carriers before they actually reach the consumer. So phone companies have said that's another reason why it's difficult to trace them back. So they have been working on efforts to kind of routinize that process to be able to speed that up. So that's one thing that's being worked on.
So Ajit Pai, who's the FCC chairman in the Trump administration, is more business friendly in his approach as opposed to consumer friendly. That's a trait that not uncommon in Republican administrations. Is he tone deaf to the consumer complaints on this, or does he just feel that this is something that the marketplace will work out, Margot?
I don't know yet. We are hopeful that he's not tone deaf. He certainly has taken a number of initiatives or initiated a number of proceedings to deal with robocalls, all of which we think are a move in the right direction. Whether or not he will follow through and close the door on unwanted robocalls and allow consumers to have the control that we're advocating, we'll just have to see. That is definitely going to be the subject of a proceeding coming up. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce just filed a petition last week requesting that the definition of auto dialer be significantly narrowed.
And I think actually the FCC commissioner you need to keep an eye on is Michael O'Reilly, another Republican. He seems to speak in favor of the industry quite a lot. If you go back and review his statements He always seems to be the one who is speaking up for the industry. So, you know, you might want to put him at the top of your list to look at.
last year, Maggie, the FCC passed rules allowing phone companies to block robocalls from unassigned numbers or from numbers that don't exist. Are these the weird numbers you see on caller ID from time to time that even have letters in them? I mean, it's bizarre to me.
The 1234567. Yeah.
And if permission to block these calls exists, why do I keep seeing these numbers show up on my caller ID?
Well, I mean, again, it goes back to everything we've been talking about here, you know, in terms of, you know, I think anybody who's probably using those numbers is doing it illegally, and they don't want to be found. And, you know, it's hard to make criminals comply with the law unless, you know, but, you know, Margo could probably speak to that. If there's enough, you know, bite to the laws and there's some way to track these people down, then that will deter them. But until we have that, you're going to have people violating and violating.
Margo?
Yeah, this exemption applies to only a very small number of these calls, four categories of spoofed calls. So the vast majority of spoofed calls are not going to be covered by these rules. However, the FCC did rule in 2015 that phone companies may offer to consumers optional opt-in call blocking technology that can have much more leeway to stop unwanted calls.
I mean, why would this ruling not apply to anything that doesn't give you the correct phone number or anybody who blocks their phone number? Why would they let some of these spoof calls slip through? What's the point?
That's what we said in our comments, the Consumers Union and FCC's comments. We pointed out that it's a great thing to block calls from numbers that don't exist or have not yet been signed, but it's like closing one half the barn door before and allowing all the animals to go out the other half. The problem is that they cannot actually stop, allow blocking for all the other calls because they can't tell who they're from. So the first step is authentication, to require authentication of all phone companies, and then the spoofing will be able to be identified with much more certainty, and the blocking will be much more precise.
So telemarketers evidently break the law every time they call or text a cell phone without the owner's permission, Maggie. But in fairness, how would they know that a particular number is assigned to a cell phone? Obviously, they know if they're going to text you, but if they're going to call it, how do they know it's a cell phone?
Well, they can tell that it's a cell phone. I think one of the big problems is, though, that numbers get reassigned, particularly cell phone numbers. So someone else who had your number before may have consented to have to receive certain calls, and then they keep calling, and each time they do, they rack up a huge fine. So that is a problem, and that is something that the FCC is trying to address with a database. And again, trying to notify, you know, the phone company should be able to notify a marketer when that number has been reassigned.
Hmm. And you've also written on CNET that some of us, and we've kind of talked about this a little bit before, but some of us may have actually given our consent to a company to make calls to us, but we may not know that we gave that permission.
How is that possible? For example, if you sign up for a service or, you know, you've signed up for something because you want to get some coupons or you want to get a discount on something. When you sign up for that service, if you've checked a box saying that you are willing to get, you know, marketing information from them and to be contacted by them, you may have consented. You know, and it gets really tricky here. And you know, obviously the folks here who are lawyers on the call know more about that, the ins and outs, than I do. But it definitely makes me realize that when I'm signing up for services, I really think twice about checking that box.
Do you always have a box to check, or is it sometimes in the terms of service that nobody reads?
I believe you have to explicitly consent by checking off a box or by signing something. I don't think they can just slip it in You know, and that's the interesting thing about cell phones. And we've talked about that a little bit here, that landline and cell phone is treated differently. You know, I think also part of the reasoning for treating the cell phone differently, not only the costs that could be incurred, but also that it's a very personal device and it's very close to us. You know, people have their cell phones by their beds, sometimes under their pillows, right? So it's a very personal thing. And so it's treated that way. And the law, I think, is a little bit more explicit about whether you are consenting to receive marketing on your cell phone. It's a lot more strict than if you're consenting on a landline.
So Dan in Hickory emails, I have a rarely used prepaid phone at 25 cents per minute. Whoa. If I could reverse the charge, the spammers would stop. Is there any discussion of that technology where you could just say, okay, I'll take the call. It's going to cost you 25 cents a minute.
I have heard those ideas tossed around. So that's a good idea. We should consider that.
Technically, how would you do that? Maggie?
Well, I mean, given that the vast majority of people have unlimited calling, I don't know how you would do it now. But yeah, I mean, that would also take some work on the carriers.
So of the apps, Maggie, that are available for cell phone owners to block these calls or to select which calls you will take and which calls you will block, what seem to be the most effective?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think even basic things, settings on your phone can be can be effective. Like, for example, I have an Android phone and there is a setting on my Android phone. And I get, you know, if a call that comes through that looks like it's spam, it's like bright red comes through. And I can, you know, as the numbers come in, my phone is asking me if I recognize this number. And if I don't, and I want it to be on some kind of blocked list, I can hit a button and you know, helps do that. So, you know, I mean, again, I think part of the problem is the spoofing, that these numbers are always changing, but the technology is there and it can be helpful.
So we have a minute left, and these seem to be something that we're not going to really be able to solve very soon. And there doesn't seem to be any political will to do that. But if the rule of thumb, I would imagine, is don't answer the phone if you don't recognize the number. But if they get through, if you do answer the phone, what should you do? How should you behave? What, if anything, should you say or not say?
Stop calling me.
Stop calling me, and never use the word yes, because if you're being recorded, they can splice that in somehow and say that was consent.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I've actually heard from some folks that you shouldn't say anything. Just hang up. Because the thing is you don't want them to get your some of these.
Right.
Folks will record your voice.
And that's the all time we have, Maggie. You get the last word, though. Maggie Reardon, senior reporter for CNET, Maureen Mahoney, public policy fellow at Consumers Union, and Margot Saunders, senior counsel for the National Consumer Law Center. Thank you all for the hour.